The Back Page, brought to you by Mirror Sport and backed by Ladbrokes.
We're back. It's just three of us this week. It's myself, Shane Stapleton, Johnny Ward. How are you doing?
Good, Shane.
You're a little under the weather, you are?
Yeah, a lot of people seem to be getting cold, and I've succumbed as well, I think.
Sure, look, these things are what it is.
Not the worst now, but I hope I don't have to go down the old antibiotics route, because if I get a bad cold, I'm not having this. So.
Well, Brian Whelan had a cold for the All-Ireland final once, and he's thrown up full forward, got 1 5-man of the match, so I expect something similar here.
There you are.
And Declan Martin, we haven't seen you for a couple of weeks, but you're back.
No, back for the international break again. Yeah. Seems to be on every international one.
Yeah.
It's depressing.
You love that stuff. Mm. Actually, speaking of depressing, your team got relegated there last week. Talk to us about that.
Yeah, down Limerick. I don't want to talk too much about it because it'll overshadow such a big international week. But it was pretty devastating stuff, pretty poor stuff all around.
Yeah.
Look forward to a couple of First Division. I'll see Johnny Ward's Galway in the First Division next year, hopefully.
It's hard to know where either team is going at the moment, because the First Division will be fairly strong next year, and Limerick could be stripped a bit bare, like now, you know, and Galway United are just don't have the players at the moment. So it's, you know, you look at the likes of Longford, Shelburne, Drogheda, ahead of us probably, it's not going to be easy to get out, which is pretty bleak, I'm afraid.
Would you have expected an Airtricity League First Division preview the week of the international football? Yeah. That's the kind of quality you get on this podcast.
It might be just as entertaining.
Yeah, probably.
It'd probably be more entertaining.
Yeah. We've loads coming up here. We'll look at some international games. We'll look at the rugby as well, the battle of the gladiators, Ireland against New Zealand. A little bit of NFL, loads of racing, and some GAA club matches coming at the weekend. You know, when you think of Ireland playing New Zealand this weekend and you think of Ireland playing against Northern Ireland, it's just one of those weeks where it reminds you how much teams love robbing players off each other. And in the Irish rugby case, we like making them face against their home country. Bundy Aki signed, he was 24 when he signed for Connacht, probably dreamed of playing for New Zealand all the way up. And now in 2018, he's going to be playing against them. It's, you know, CJ Standard, he's played against South Africa three times. Jared Payne, who's now retired, played against New Zealand twice. I think as punishment for our systematic use of this player recruitment system, you know, the player, what's it called again? The project players, yeah. That we should be forced to start Michael Benton every game. the one lad who didn't work out for us.
In fairness, Kiwis take a lot of players from the island nations around as well and make them into New Zealand. But the rugby laws and nationality are a load of rubbish, in fairness.
At least they've gone from the 3-year rule to 5-year rule.
At least they have laws around it, to be fair. The football one seems a bit all over the place with the story with Michael Obafemi at the moment. Another one cropping up of the under 21 level. You probably don't come across that, at least in terms of rugby, as much, to be fair.
And you see the likes of Michael Duffy, and then like Jimmy Dunn's had conversation with both Northern Ireland and Ireland, the Burnley lad. So, like, if you think back when we were getting players and there wasn't a rancor over it, it's just there's always been a transfer saga. James McLean and Mark Wilson, didn't they play underage for Northern Ireland? Mm. Our manager Martin O'Neill played for Northern Ireland. You have the Rice, Obafemi, now Grealish as well. Like, even when you think about this rivalry compared with 25 years ago when we played that World Cup qualifier, won all at Windsor Park. Are you up for this game in any way, shape, or form?
No. It's very hard to be motivated just because, you know, we've played a system the last couple of games which basically involved not conceding against fairly average enough teams, like, you know, and where are we going? You know, Robbie Brady's potential return is about the only positive news at the moment. The Rice situation looks pretty bad. Obafemi, as much as he's an awful lot to prove,
Is the Obafemi one a bit strange, because he's played twice for Southampton and we're starting to get worried. Are footballers now thinking in the long term a lot more? Because I think back when we probably got a few players off England back in the day, they must have been thinking about improving their immediate future. Surely if Michael Obafemi became an international player at the age of 18, his future would be looking a lot bigger already. The fact that he's thinking down the line.
He might think that he has other options, and he might just be thinking that in terms of my career, if I get a cap with England, it'd be worth a lot more. He might be thinking that Ireland are no good as well, which in one sense is a good thing, because he's a fair chance of actually becoming a striker for us. I've never seen him play, but obviously he has a fair bit of ability. But it's just this kind of, he doesn't even have dual nationality. He could apply for three countries.
Nigeria,
and like, he might feel slightly ambivalent about at least one of them. And I don't really begrudge him. Like, I know saw Kevin Kilbane tweeting about it, that... it's like, look, but don't touch was the line he used, which can see where he's coming from, but at the same time, it could mean a lot to him in terms of the money he's going to make. And if we were in the boat, in that boat, we might do the same thing.
Like a lot
not
of
everyone feels the same way, same passion that Kevin Kilbane does about Ireland. Some people,
exactly,
as you said, will have feelings towards other nationalities.
We're going to kind of look at these two games together: Ireland against Northern Ireland, and then Denmark against Ireland in the UEFA Nations League. Because a lot of people, by the time they listen to this, the first game will have been played. But just back to the Obafemi things, like Martin O'Neill says, he won't be rushing him. Do you like the idea of bringing a guy in for training just to show him what's up our skirt, really?
Basically, I don't mind it in a sense, because there's such a... He's always done it anyway.
We could have a committed lad in there.
Yeah, but at the moment, there's so many... The team is going through so many changes that you just need to pile through. A bit of the spaghetti tactic.
Patrick Hooban, would you prefer him in there?
I personally don't think Patrick Hooban's good enough for that level, even though he's gotten a lot of goals in Ireland. You know, if you look at... against Cork City this season, and again in games in Europe, that amounts to 10 games. I think he scored 2 goals. And that's not to say that he's not able against the top teams, but he got an awful lot of goals against weaker opposition. And I don't think personally that he's good enough to be our main striker. But now he could be worth his place in the squad. But I think with Obafemi, though, he's young. Like, I mean, he's played for Southampton and he's young. We have so little. Why not bring him into the squad and show him around? I have no issue with that. And I respect... I don't like Martin O'Neill's management of Ireland in general, but I respect what he's done with Rice and Obafemi. I think he's been very pragmatic and very decent about the whole thing, and I think that's fair.
All you have to lose with bringing Obafemi is maybe some hurt feelings at the end of it. You're not actually... risking much, as you said. You're bringing in maybe Hooban, who probably won't get that much time, because there is a fair few players in that squad who'll probably get a run in ahead of Obafemi anyway. So I'm not totally sure there's a whole lot to be lost.
It's kind of the norm now for players to test out a few countries, even to see what fits. Underage, you hear of guys, he played for Ireland last month, England next month. It's kind of like a GAA player who trains with a few clubs up in Dublin before deciding which is the best fit. There is actually a little bit of that to it. What do you make of the Glenn Whelan situation? You know, he said that Dunphy's quotes about him, you know, can't see a pass, can't carry the ball. Whatever he said after the Sweden game in 2013, a bit personal. Like, in some ways, he's a bit of a limited player, but is it fair to say he's been derided a bit too much over the years?
Yeah, probably, like, because he does a lot of hold him in field stuff that people genuinely don't notice, and it's hard to notice. Just picking up positions that you're not on the ball, but at least you're blocking out avenues for them to play, like, and, like, clearly Glenn Whelan's a limited enough footballer, he'd tell you that himself, but, like, Dunphy's style of, you know, punditry has been very personalised, and I've sympathy for him. I've less sympathy for Seamus Coleman kind of having a go at Keith Andrews over what he said. But I think with Seamus Coleman also, it was just like trying to bring some morale to a fairly downtrodden bunch of players.
Definitely.
You know, but Glenn Whelan, by all accounts, is a very decent guy, and you've got to admire people who mainly maybe weren't blessed with an enormous talent, but made the most of it. Like, I'd have more, you know, regard for them than really talented wasters. Like, do you know what I mean?
Like, a career that's over 10 years, made his debut under Trapattoni, as far as I remember, and then Martin O'Neill. So he's two managers who basically, they left their midfielders play often 2-3 throughout the majority of his career. We don't play football, so we don't utilise our midfielders. Talents that he often showed for Stoke. Now, he's not amazing. We never said that. But you're playing against with negative managers who leave you outnumbered the whole time and who basically boot the ball over your head.
Absolutely.
So what chance had he?
I remember watching a couple of games when we go on the break and the two midfielders would literally just get to the halfway line. It was like kind of a... like a herd of cattle coming up to an electric fence. They just shied, like, and stopped. Like, you know, and it's like, it was grim, but... Glenn Whelan, like, I remember watching him a couple of times at Stoke, and he'd play these really good passes. Like, he does have talent, but with Ireland, he was given a particular job, and unfortunately, that's the way it's carried on. You know, we've midfielders who just don't really play much football.
Did you ever touch off an electric fence yourself?
I did, yes. I wouldn't be a fan, though.
Yeah, I did it myself once. What was your memory of it?
I wouldn't want it to happen again. Like, it was,
what did it feel like?
It was kind of like a thump to the chest, like. Sort of.
Yeah, I remember feeling I grabbed one for the crack, thinking this would be hilarious.
I wouldn't grab it now. I was only literally touching it. Like,
it was like underneath the armpit or something like that. Like a massive crackle. It was.
I tried to inadvertently walked into one and trying to climb past it. And that was bad news. We were right down.
So there's most certainly not nice. I mean, they're designed for like animals a lot bigger than us, so we're going to struggle hitting
Ireland's midfield.
That feeling brings us nicely to the backstop battle, which is Ireland against Northern Ireland. Like, we'll just briefly touch on this one. It's two poor teams. Like, Northern Ireland lost twice to Bosnia Herzegovina, either side of a defeat to Austria. Ireland, we know the form here, hammered 4-1 by Wales, goalless draw with Denmark, and then losing to Wales as well. Like Shane Long not there, Jason Jonathan Walters not there. I mean, to be honest, it's such an unappealing game. It's hard to really get up for even a discussion about it.
I'm probably right in saying it's a historic day coming up for both teams, because this will probably be their first ever relegation on the Monday.
Yeah.
So it'll be a bit like having like 20th versus 19th or something in the Premier League, watching a match towards the end of the season. 21-20 about Republic of Ireland, 15-8 the draw, and 27-10 about Northern Ireland. Tough one to find any interest and value in. I don't think it'll be scoreless. I think there probably will be some goals. 1-1 is about 5-1. Handy little bet would be something like Northern Ireland to win and under 3.5 goals. That's at about 16-5. I think they just look, for all things considered, in sort of a better setup. There's a lot more changing of the guard from Ireland's team. You go right down, even as you mentioned, Robbie Brady coming back, you go right down there. There's not really any sort of solid starters in that team at the moment. The one player you'll say has done anything positive in the last couple of games is probably Callum Robinson. He's 11-2 to get the first goal, and we're going to double the odds on your win first goal scores if your player scores in the first 20 minutes.
Yeah, I really couldn't call the game. Robinson's, like, in fairness, he's actually not in the worst of form. He's scoring for Preston.
He does carry the ball as well.
Yeah, and he seems to have a good kind of character about him when he's in the dressing room.
Even on the pitch, he does a lot of pointing and shouting. Yeah. I noticed in the last couple of games as well, which is nice to see. It's been a while since he saw any sort of leadership out there.
Steve, I'd at a stretch, I think the South might win, but I wouldn't be having a bet in it.
Stephen Davis says, the Northern Ireland captain, says there is going to be an edge. There's not going to be an edge.
No,
let's be honest.
God, we were looking at the Windsor Park game 25 years ago during the week. I remember that as a kid, and just the tension. And I was watching it as a kid at home, but compare that to this. And I personally want us to have a United Ireland. I want us to have an All Ireland football team, obviously. So I don't want us to be like sworn enemies against each other, but you'd still want to be a bit of crack tonight, you know.
You want a pathway forward, by the sounds of it.
Yeah, although a United Irish team at the moment wouldn't be much better than either of the teams, because we don't have an awful lot of quality, so especially at Premier League level. I think that North have maybe three players playing the Premier League, and we've something similar, and none is really, very little coming through, you know. And actually, interestingly enough, when Brexit comes into force, there may be a limit on how many non sort of UK players can play in the Premier League. So, and I think there may be regulations coming in to actually narrow the amount of non nationals you have in your squad. Which will be interesting for Ireland. It might definitely benefit the League of Ireland, I think, but I don't know where it's going to go. But I think we've 250 players playing in England or so at the moment. But our relevance has just waned so much.
I wonder then, for because there's going to be free movement still for Northern Ireland players.
Yeah.
Surely there's going to be a lot more of them in England if there's going to be fewer players from beyond, basically.
Yeah, it's still a small pool, though. Do you know what I mean?
I know, but imagine they'd be playing slightly higher level.
Yeah.
But anyway, we'll move on to Denmark against Ireland, because is it more important? Ireland are one of 13 countries that are about to be relegated in the UEFA Nations League.
We don't actually have betting for this one at the moment. But
James McLean is suspended as well.
Yeah.
So the one lad that might put a bit of an old fire in your belly is gone. Jesus, we're awful dour about this game, aren't we? These couple of games. Seamus Coleman,
got the rugby to come at least, so we can help up a bit for that.
Yeah, I love that. Seamus Coleman said about the 5-1 loss last year, that he was injured at the time. It was a tough night, that one, at the end of last year, and we need to go there and put it right. But when our backs are on the ropes sometimes, that's when we're at our best. So we're out without a competitive victory in 5 games. Can anyone see us turning it around in our house?
No, probably not. I would say, just looking at the game and looking at the betting, you'd probably get Denmark a slight shed of odds on with a draw, probably about 17-10. I reckon Ireland probably be about 2-3-1, something along those lines. I tell you what's very worrying, actually, just thinking of it down a bit further down the line. Actually, the attendance for these next few games, when you think of the relegation, is going to be a big problem. I reckon in that stadium next year, Irish crowds turning up to games against teams in the C division might be pretty disappointing.
Yeah, if we can't pack it for Denmark and Wales.
That's it. Think of how that's going to look next year. Maybe if they start winning a few games, people will start coming back along. But
rather than giving out free tickets, they'll have to start paying people to go.
Yeah. It's true. I spoke to a fella earlier who he rang me this morning. I rang him back and I was 100% sure he was offering me a ticket for the game because they have a suite there. He actually wasn't. He was ringing about something else, but he told me that his company are just basically really strongly considering just pulling out next year because of the quality of the fixtures. And you can see the FEI used words 40,000 tickets were gone.
Yeah.
Sent
out,
left down, and not sure what
game
kind of
was that. Was that the Denmark game? But it was clear that, and as Daniel McDonald said, like, you've paid a good bit of money for your seat, and there's a fellow beside you who's effectively there for free. Like, and I'm offered tickets for every Ireland game now. They're just confetti. Because we're playing rubbish football, and it's very hard to watch. So it's a grim time, and I don't think it's going to improve under this management.
Well, when we go down to the C division. Surely, then, in some ways it's better, because if we finish top of the group, go into the playoff and win that, then we can get qualification. So in some ways, at least there's that.
Yeah, we can have the Gibraltar thing, the feeling of winning some games and playing a bit of football. From our point of view, the problem is that we're not going to play a bit of football even when we are playing C-level teams. It's going to be the same.
Denmark should be beating us, really. You know, with Ericsson wasn't playing the last time we played them. They hockeyed us, obviously, in Lansdowne Road for the qualifiers, and they have quality we don't have.
I'll tell you what's one interesting thing for Denmark. They play Wales just before that, so there's probably a little internal battle that we're sort of neglected from between those two. But it's probably about 2-1 for the draw. That looks a very even game. Doesn't look all that bad to me. You can get something like Bale to get 2 or more goals at 6-1. I think he probably will line out. So not a bad looking game, that, actually.
And England have their game as well. And Wayne Rooney getting his farewell. Now, it's not as high profile as Glenn Whelan getting his. But some amount of heat going on that decision to bring him back for...
Very strange, I thought. Yeah. I don't see the problem. I think I mentioned this in a podcast a couple of weeks ago. George Weah turned out for Libya, a couple of months ago, playing against Nigeria. He's 50 something, you know what I mean? Like,
George Weah was only in his 30s about 3 years ago, I thought.
So he's probably about 60, 70 something.
Fabian Martins,
but even you think, I think they did the same for Beckham. And sure, we organised a game against Oman just to give Robbie Keane a goal, you know what I mean?
So they're the only team that gives a game, though, to be fair, for a long time. Them in Poland.
I certainly wouldn't be getting worked up about it. And in fairness to Rooney, he's had a fine career, no issue with it at all. It'll be an interesting game, actually. Repeat, obviously, of the semi-final. Two good sides, two sides that are nice to watch.
That's the USA game now. He's getting the friendly, just in case we confuse. Sorry, he's not playing the Croatia game.
But the Croatia game, in fairness, that'll actually just look at games like that, and you're like, geez, when are we ever going to play a game that you'd actually be excited about again?
Yeah.
17-20 about England for that game against Croatia on the Sunday, then 12-5 the draw. Croatia as big as 13-4, which I thought is quite good. Now they play Spain before that, so they'll have back-to-back games. Two very interesting games, actually, in that group. It's all to play for there, really.
Yeah, the top end of the UEFA Nations League is pretty class. Like, you'd imagine most of them are going to get through to the Euros anyway, so is there that much at stake? But it's still cool to see them.
And people have embraced those games. Like, it's just getting rid of those stupid friendlies as well, like, you know, and giving the likes of Gibraltar the chance to win a game, and giving the likes of us the chance to beat Northern Ireland.
Does also
like
mean, say, even as we talked about, the couple of options that might be involved, like Obafemi or something like that, it means those squads are more important, because you're only going to have a couple of subs. You're not going to have 11 subs. You're not going to chuck the whole field on. So you're going to have to consider the squad a bit more. And as you mentioned for Huben or something like that earlier, he's probably not in the first 14, 15 people you'd be thinking of involving.
I think it's been a good idea anyway. I've enjoyed it.
So that's plenty of chat on Ireland in one code. In the rugby then, New Zealand this weekend. We all know about the heroics, if I can be generously call it that, against New Zealand in Chicago a couple of years ago. Last week, Ireland beat Argentina 28-17. It was minus 17 on the handicap, which I think everyone in the studio here last week was like, that is absolutely nuts. You'll have the teams haven't been released as we speak, but Sean O'Brien, we know, is out. It won't be Conor Murray. Does anyone here expect Ireland to win this game?
I wouldn't put it completely beyond them.
They have to have a chance, because England were so close on Saturday.
The thing about that game, though, was the rain ruined it. And you knew from about an hour before the game, this game was going to be down to a kick, because the rain just took it apart. It was an awful little watch. England were good for 20 minutes and then terrible. And then they convinced themselves that they were robbed. But what really happened essentially was New Zealand just didn't play anywhere near what they're capable of. I'd expect it to probably be a bit drier for this game, supposedly. A bit of rain would help us massively. But New Zealand should be. Yeah, yeah.
Why?
Because it slows New Zealand down,
again,
essentially.
Ball skills, like, they have superior ball skills. Massively. Surely that's going to stand out in the rain a bit more.
It didn't, though. I think the England game showed that they were a bit vulnerable to that kind of thing, to some basic stuff.
Last time Ireland played against New Zealand was the week after the Chicago game, or maybe 2 weeks after the Chicago game, and they came along and physically some horrendous high tackles. It was filthy stuff.
The ref will have a big job on now this weekend, because if they go anywhere near, I mean, that was disgraceful. There should have been so many, and massive plus for Ireland if one of their players ends up in the bin in the early stages. But I don't see it being the same. I think that was more a revenge mission, an anger mission, and they managed to get away with that one.
Now, I might be being a bit optimistic with this, but in the last... So Ireland have played 5 tests since June 2012. If you take out the 60-0 game in June 2012, the last 4 tests have been 96 to New Zealand, 90 to Ireland. Sorry, that goes back further than 2012. But that's not
close.
You know, like other than 60-0, which could happen Saturday too. Unlikely, but
no. Like we're extremely competitive. I think home advantage is big here, and this will be close. Like Ireland have been aiming for this game for a long time.
No Murray,
but
the two boys actually scored tries. Kieran Marmion and Luke McGrath, little snipes.
There's a few. I just thinking, yeah, Marmion should be very, very interesting. When you mentioned the try scores, I was looking at the Chicago game. And I wonder how significant it is. I think is it 4 players that scored tries in that game are no longer in the team? So Zeebo would have been gone, Murray and Henshaw both out, and I think Jordy Murphy, I don't think he's in the squad either. So you wonder how much better we are than that occasion. Probably a fair bit, to be honest. You'd expect it to be a lot closer. It's 6 points in the handicap, so I'm just having a look at the betting here at the moment. 15-8 in the match betting for Ireland to win, 25-1 the draw, and New Zealand 4-9. Then you've got 6 points in the handicap, with Ireland at 10-11 the draw, 25-1, and New Zealand also at 10-11.
I see a lot of talk about the kicking game going to be important here, that Ireland will probably have a fairly limited attacking plan. They'll just, you know, they're efficient and very successful. And that's probably the best way that they can try and beat New Zealand, because if it's an open game, Ireland are in trouble. But Australia exposed Ireland in the second and third test when they didn't kick the ball out of touch, they just kicked it up the field. And New Zealand will probably do the same, try and force Ireland to counter-attack.
To actually play,
and turn them over. And that's where Ireland could be in trouble.
A big point is including Devon Toner as well. Clearly with an eye on the lineouts, he's a big part of that. When he's not in there, we just don't win as many lineouts. So that will be a big part of Ireland's game, you imagine, on the weekend as well. I'd be relatively optimistic all in all. The only slightly irritating thing is Ryan Crotty's gone in there, and everyone remembers him from 2012, I think, when he scored the late try to win New Zealand the game. And just he's in for Sonny Bill Williams. Apart from that, New Zealand are relatively unchanged, I believe, from what I've read. The one strange thing, actually, I was just reading about Ryan Crotty before coming in a little while. I found an article from the Irish Examiner from back in 2012 that he's apparently originally from Clare, and lineage links him to Brian Boru. So there you go. There's something very peculiar.
I actually watched some of that. Was it Amazon Prime had those All or Nothing series? The one that Man City did, and there was a 6-part one on New Zealand. And I said I'd chance it, and I watched the first series, and it's supposed to be, first episode, behind the scenes stuff. They're the most boring shower. You got nothing out of them altogether. It was like a collection of press conferences that that were made to look like behind the scenes interviews, and it was absolutely.
You wouldn't be recommending it.
No. Don't go near it. I reckon New Zealand on the handicap here. -6 isn't bad.
No, I was looking. I think if New Zealand win it, they'll probably win it by a bit more. I think if it's rainy, it'll probably come down to a couple of kicks. If it's not, it'll probably be, I mean, something like New Zealand 6-10 is 5-1, which is a good price, to be fair, for New Zealand.
But no Murray. Ireland scrum half who knows how to beat New Zealand. And I know it's not scrum half alone, and it's the type 5 and all this kind of crack, but
you take world class players out of any team, they are going to miss them. Just an interesting one on the Irish perspective. I was looking at our match betting is 15-8 for Ireland to win. If you go with Ireland between 1-12 points, they're not going to win more than that. It's 11-4, so you're getting a handy
it's a
little
far
boost.
Better bet.
Yeah.
11-4.
11-4. Yeah. So Ireland 1-12 points, 11-4 is probably the standout.
Chalk
bet
that
there.
Down as one of your best bets for the end of the show.
Massively. And also, just to flag up as well, we're going to double the odds on your winning first try score as your player goes on to score another try. So again, you're looking through
Bowden Barrett there.
Yeah, the usual obvious names. Bowden Barrett would be about 14-1. So
his drop goal against England was his first in 71 tests or something like that.
His first one?
Yeah, absolutely nuts. Just don't go for them. Like,
no.
You know, like for an out half, first in about 71 tests, insane.
Whereas you think Ronan O'Gara, he was never but scoring him because he had nothing outside him for Munster for ages.
It's interesting. They just doesn't seem to be in their culture to go for them. And I remember Zinzan Brook scoring from number 8 for New Zealand in the World Cup in probably 95, something like that.
Bring back John Eales, the number 5, taking conversions as well. Right, so that's that collision sport. There's plenty of other games on as well, but we'll move on. NFL this weekend as well. LA Rams against Kansas City Chiefs has to be the game of the weekend. You're talking about two teams that are 9-1 each. They have two of the most explosive offenses in the league. And the interesting thing about this game is that it was supposed to be played in Mexico City. But the NFL pulled it out because of the pitch was in a state in the Azteca Stadium. So they all agreed that the safety concerns were enough that they had to move it back. But funnily enough, the Rams had travelled to Colorado Springs on Monday to start preparing for the high altitude of Mexico City. It's nuts what goes on in America. One plus point to this, I suppose, if you can call it a plus point.
Rachel is laughing there, our producer. It's nuts what's going on in America. We're not talking about your gun laws,
well,
either.
Yeah, nuts.
Or your president.
No, there's a couple of horrific tragedies in the last couple, or last week, in that neck of the woods. So thousands of tickets are being donated to the first responders and those affected by the wildfires and the mass shootings in Thousand Oaks. So that actually, you know, within a massive horror, that is that's a nice little touch there. Two brilliant quarterbacks here, Patrick Mahomes and Jared Goff, but it's actually the running backs, Todd Gurley and Kareem Hunt, the battle of those two, that makes this really interesting. The tip I'd make on this game, and I said two explosive offenses, but total points 62.5, that's 10-11. I'd be all over that as well. This is just like the defenses are all right, but you've got two of the best offenses going, so definitely going to be all over that.
On the money line, you'll have LA Rams about 8-15, Kansas City Chiefs at 6-4, and then the spread is 3.5, so LA Rams 19-20 and the Chiefs 20-23, I should say.
Yeah, Chiefs 6-4 outright, is it?
6-4.
Jeez, I wouldn't be running away from that because the Rams have lost their best receiver, Cooper Kupp. So, yeah, I wouldn't be shying away from that.
You hadn't really agreed with me in terms of the GA red zone. We mentioned it a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah,
on Twitter or something like that.
So for those who don't know what we're talking about,
a lot of people responded saying they wouldn't fancy it at all.
Yeah, so those who don't know what we're talking about, it's like the NFL on a Sunday. They have this option whereby it just jumps from game to game to game, depending on who's attacking and who's in a, you know, sort of an exciting little moment there. And
it'd be a bit like watching the soccer Saturday Sky Sports News if instead of going to some absolute English Barney, you
instead
went
of going from
Merson
to Thompson and all those lads and watching them talk, it'd be going from game to game wherever there's a good incident going on. Now, in GAA, especially hurling, there's too much excitement at all times. You can't switch over anyway. So
I would agree. And it's also very hard to, you know, it's more of a structured game in American football where there are breaks, you know, they're on the 30, time to switch over. Hurling I don't think it'd be.
It's rat-a-tat-tat.
Yeah.
Right, lads, we move to the racing. There's some good jumps this weekend at Punchestown and Cheltenham.
There is, right throughout the couple of days. We'll start, I suppose, just with the Friday. One that stood out for me is the Country Chase over at Cheltenham, 3 o'clock. Good to see Tiger Roll back in there. Personally, even with Top Weight, can't see this one being beaten. I don't know how you feel about that, Johnny. He's currently, I think, just betting cutting up here at the moment. I think he's about 11-8 at the top of the betting, maybe about 2-1. He was a bit bigger last couple of days, around 3s. You have Josie's Orders, Bless the Wings, Midnight Shot, and Fact of Matter all in there as well.
Yeah, the only thing about this race is it is a handicap. So he obviously has to give way to
some the conditions before, wasn't it? It's changed over.
They've changed around a bit, so it's at Cheltenham. It's not a handicap at Cheltenham anymore. As far as I remember, it used to be. So Josie's Orders is quite interesting in that this is a horse that would be probably every bit as good as Tiger Roll on his day. In fact, he has run off Mark Similar, and he's getting over a stone, and he will be completely prepped for this, having gotten a typical in the Bulger prep run over hurdles. I would prefer him at the price, I have to say. Tiger Roll, his main aim this year will be to win the Grand National again. It'll be asking a lot, but his second main aim will be to run in the cross country at Cheltenham.
He's about 16-1 for the National at this stage, which is a big price. The one thing I think you can say about, at least with Tiger Roll, is Gordon Elliott's been very very vocal about what the plan is. So you can get on there nice and early if you fancy him for the National.
I wouldn't back him at 16-1 now, to be honest, but that will be his plan.
And weirdly enough, I think looking at that Chase at Cheltenham, he's about 3-1 there as well. So he probably would have gotten a similar price for him to win this rather than going all the way to Cheltenham only a couple of days ago. Now, Tiger Roll for me, maybe it's just more a big fan of the horse. But
what a horse he's been. Like a 4-year-old hurdler who's now, you know, a cross country and gold and Grand National winner. What a horse, in fairness.
Elsewhere then on Saturday, a big one that stands out is that 225 race, the Gold Cup Handicap Chase, currently with 5-1 rather be at the top, Mr. Whittaker 6s, then 7s about Calendora, Baron Alco 11s and 14-1 are bigger the rest.
Cracking race, it has to be said, one of the early season appetizers, Frodon tops the weights. not sure what form David Pipe is in, but I'm going to give King Sox another chance. I backed him at Cheltenham when he was all the rage. It was kind of based on that form behind footpad over hurdles, and he was seemingly laid out for the race at Cheltenham. Travelled great. He ran really solid over the course and trip. And then he rocked up at Aintree and he just ran a shocker. Like, he was back over 2 miles, was sent off 7-2, had a good bet to him at an astonishingly bad Aintree, and I remember just summed up the way things were going. Like, he ran no sort of a race. But Pipe's had a couple of winners lately. He's actually dropped a pound. Coming here fresh shouldn't be a major problem for him. I think he's very interesting off 10-4, and he's probably about 12-1 or something like that.
Just reading here as well, first off a wind up and first time headgear on there as well, so should make a bit of a difference. Big fan of Frodon, but as you mentioned,
top weight
without Brian's claim now as well is another big element.
Cracking horse, in fairness to him.
West Approach looks quite an each way bet for Colin Tizard here, I think.
His horses are flying a little bit.
And this one, I mean, all in all, pretty decent hurdler, useful novice last season, and I don't know, he showed some potential on the return here. He's come up in some classic contests.
That was a lovely one. If you look at him, he's actually down £7 again from £8 from literally this time last year.
So I'd be stumping for him each way in a race like this, which looks relatively open.
With the Times is another one. He was desperately disappointing as a novice. I've never really warmed to the way he jumps, but he's ample form around the course and trip. Rocked up at Fakenham on his reappearance. And obviously unseated the rider. He's a horse that was fancy for the Supreme Novice Hurdle 2 years ago, and he got injured. He's one of them horses you could see being backed off 140. Geraghty riding for Nichols. Again, Nichols is in decent form, but I'll go with the Pipe horse. Maybe give it one more chance.
I'm not sure how many of the races you went through there at Cheltenham on Saturday. Anything else that stands out? I looked through it. It's a tough old day to call a few of them races, actually.
Yeah, my mate is a stag over there, so I'm kind of deliberating whether or not to go over. Because my sister's actually playing the semi-final of that intermediate game on Sunday in Ballinasloe, so I kind of want to be home for that. So I've slightly divided loyalties on it. But it's
not as if you go over the top and be in bad order coming back for that match on Sunday, is it?
Well, it's like, you go over on the Saturday, when do you come home then? Do you come home early Sunday morning? Then you're really scrambling to get to Ballinasloe, like, so.
You're under awful pressure, and you're going to be a shell of a man.
Yeah, it would be all right. I find in England you can get away with it, really, because you drink ale and you don't really get as hungover as you do drinking Guinness over here, and I wouldn't tend to drink Guinness in England. But the World's End, he's 8-13 in that novice's chase. He's obviously quite exciting. I think if he's anywhere near as good over fences, and he looks like he will be. There's a very good race as well at Fairy House on the Saturday, which I'm just coming to now, a novice chase. And I think that they're actually maybe betting on this in due course. At Punchestown. It's obviously a big meeting at Punchestown over the 2 days. My internet's actually down here, but I think Mind's Eye is running against
novice chase with Voidarev.
Voidarev, who beat him at Galway. I actually really like Voidarev at Galway. I thought he just looked a ready-made chaser. He went out in front. Mind's Eye loomed up and he just scooted by him. It was a very good performance, and I think he's quite exciting, actually. He was one, if you remember, he tipped up beside Campeador in the Fred Winter independently at the last, which would be 3 seasons ago now. But I think he'll take a lot of beating. I definitely expect him to confirm the form with Mind's Eye.
Hugely, I'd him circle as one of the best bets for the meeting as well. He's got Hardline up there challenging. Hardline's a strange one for me. I think whenever he's been sort of up against it, I don't think he's beaten a whole lot. I mean, going through the races there, he just looks suspect in that sense. And he's second favourite. I'd nearly rather be looking at something like Cadmium or Mind's Eye than Hardline, but Voidarev for me has beaten in that field easily.
Just before that as well, at Dundalk on Friday night, I thought that this is a tricky enough card, but Amanat in the 6 o'clock, I'm pretty sweet on him. I think he should take a bit of beating. That'll be an each way price.
What about on sticking with Saturday for a minute there, actually, at Punchestown, the Mayor's contest, because there's a few names there. I don't know if they'll all go. Probably not.
Isn't it?
Yeah, the 220 race. And you've got Mullins with a few in here. I just thought I'd get your thoughts if you know what's going on with Limini at the moment there, because it's been an absolute disaster bringing Limini back. Disappointed, I'd say, all in all last year. Yeah. And then reappearance has been, I mean, what, got a £10 claim last time as well, didn't it? It was an absolute shocker.
Conor McNamara. See, in fairness, Willie had so many runners in that race. She was probably well down the list. She's had a good year, really. You know, she was brilliant at Leopardstown. She, you know, nearly won before that. There's every reason she should be still a top-notch hurdler, like, you know, and she comes here race fit. I would expect that Lorena will probably appear in due course. We have Stormy Ireland as well. She's entered. Good Time Tara, who's been very, very good. Stormy Ireland, she could still be very exciting over hurdles. I think if she can kind of just get her, just chill out a bit, basically. She's such a nut job. She goes off so fast, but...
She fell in two big races last year, so that'll affect the sort of confidence in her, you think. So you might get one at a handy price.
I thought she might struggle to get up. They'll probably ease her back into it. It's very, very hard to know who he's going to run in this. But being a listed race, you imagine you run two or three. Clearly, Flimini's and like her best, so she should be winning if she runs.
Then just one or two, I suppose, to chip into on Sunday, starting with the Morgiana. It looks an absolutely brilliant clash, but I don't know how likely it is that we'll see all of these. They're probably really unlikely. There's been a bit of talk from Sam Crowe's connections that the ground will probably affect it, so you'd be a little bit concerned that he might not rock up there.
God, it'll be very disappointing if he doesn't run. Yeah. But again, it's like I was on the beach this morning in North Dublin. It might as well have been a summer's day. It's mid-November and it was really, really mild, and they're giving it a bit of yielding. Like I sound like a farmer here, but we badly need rain at this stage. We badly need rain. Race courses need rain. The land needs rain. And a lot of connections of horses have lost a lot of money this year because their horses haven't been able to run. Yeah.
You sound like a John B. King.
We need rain. Definitely, I'm 36 now. There's never been a year like it in terms of 6 months of virtually no rain. Like it's in Dublin, I had a leak in my apartment and I couldn't actually tell I couldn't tell if the leak were fixed or not because it just there's been no rain. So they literally it's like Father Ted, warm winter, cold winter ahead. Like I'm just like I need some rain, but hopefully Sam Crowe wins here. I don't think Mellon's going to run. You know the Bettner's really, kind of come in for Faugheen. Lorena's in the race as well. I get the vibe Mellon won't run. Beyond that, I don't know. But
Super Sunday has been named. Is it?
Yeah, he could run. If Sam Crowe is beaten here, they may well abandon hurdling.
I was going to ask because you're on the other side, aren't you? You
should go chasing. Yeah, so and I know others. I know. Like I'd say it was a tough decision between Eddie O'Leary and Michael O'Leary, and obviously Gordon Elliott. I'd say there was probably a bit of a split camp. I'm guessing, like, but you could see both arguments. The Jigginstown have never won the champion hurdle, but this horse is a chaser, you know what I mean? And I chasing is what it's all about for me. He's 6 going on 7. They're not around for too long, and I would definitely be going chasing with them. They weren't that disappointed with Down Royal, as it turns out. So I think you definitely expect a better horse. Fair point about the ground though, Declan. It's not going like for 2 miles. It will bring his he'll have to be quick.
It's a bit of a shame we're not getting the Clash of the Titans. Maybe people are sort of reporting with Faugheen and Sam Crowe here because obviously Faugheen, well, Sam Crowe, I suppose, coming after a disappointment, but you'd probably be still optimistic. Faugheen, not in the same sense. A lot of pessimism about Faugheen. And after the growth removed, you don't know. I mean, I think William himself sort of said he'll need a couple of runs.
You would have thought that betting, was great, yeah. But the betting's been fairly, you know, all over the shop this week regarding what will run. So I'll be having a watch and brief until declarations come out.
Yeah. Finally, I just thought I'd touch a little bit actually on where a few of these might go, because looking at something like, let's say Faugheen, for example, likely to go to Stayers now, you think, about 6-1. I can't see them changing their minds.
Yeah,
at this stage.
Penhill is going to run, literally. He's going to be aimed at Cheltenham because he just doesn't have it in him to run. So that leaves this paucity of staying herders in Ireland. So Faugheen goes on any ground, so I would see no reason why they would just stick to staying hurdles with him. He wasn't up to 2 miles last year, but he was sensational at Punchestown. So anything like that, he'll win. He'll mop all over him.
And Lorena be interesting maybe here to see where she goes, because she's maybe a little bit more tough to distinguish champion hurdle or the mares. She's about 4-1, I think, for the mares and 6-1 for the champion hurdle.
Yeah, that's a harder one to call now, because depending on what Willie has with his champion hurdlers, that might colour his judgment. Again, I'd love to see her over fences. I expect that she might next season. She's 5 going on 6. So time is kind of her ally. Whereas with Sam Crowe, he's actually a year older and he's hurdling at the moment. So I'm kind of... But Lorena, I think they'll treat her as a champion hurdler for the time being. He's won the race with any power. He will have options for the mare's race. There's no doubt about that. And obviously her connections would want to win that race. She's a super mare.
She gets a £7 claim off a few of the big ones here as well. Yeah. And she's a great chance in this, you know.
I just don't think she'll run, being honest. But if she did, she'd be close second favourite behind Sam Crowe.
And worth noting, I think, is it going to be Davy's first time out in Sam Crowe here? That could well be interesting.
Yes, if so, actually, it would be, yeah. Absolutely. And although, having said that, I think Shane Stapleton could probably win on Sam Crowe, you know, doing a few pound over.
Yeah, and I'm carrying a few extra these days.
After your trips to the Algarve and
Yeah, down at Villamora at the weekend there with the old club team, and needless to say,
just overdid it. Yeah. Why can't you have a few drinks and just enjoy yourself and go to bed early like normal people?
Are you including yourself in that bracket?
No.
No, absolutely not. Yeah, it's like back Monday during the day there, still absolutely shook here Thursday afternoon.
Do you know what I was looking at though recently? This is kind of a bit of an aside, but I was reading about Michael McDowell. I might be reading the Business Post
reading
his article. Yeah. I can't remember why he came up, but when he was minister for... I know he was Minister for Justice. Whatever ministerial role he had at the time, he was trying to bring in licenses for cafes to have like a bar license that he could kind of bring in this European culture where, you know, you see in Paris and like, you know, cosmopolitan cities around Europe, these people go in and have a beer at their lunch and they might have something to eat and they go home, like, and it's very, very normal. And it never came true because publicans were against it. Like, how selfish is that? Like, ultimately, we've a complete binge drinking culture in this country, but it's grand, sure, it helps us. Yeah, we're against the notion of just having a little bar license in your cafe.
Yeah, we've an unhealthy relationship with drinking in Ireland. Even if you look at GAA teams, like,
we go on this massive binge. Like,
yeah, a rugby team, you can drink after your match, play again the next week, you're the finest. Seems to be the same in soccer as well.
Let's say League of Ireland, funny enough, they've gone hardcore on as well. They don't really drink at all. Like, you can have a few beers, like, it's no harm. Just put three or four, like, and then when they win some, they haven't had a beer for a year and they go off the rails for about 2 weeks.
Like, in the GAA, if you were seen drinking 3 weeks out from a championship match, especially if you're an inter-county lad,
that's nonsense.
Ah, this lad doesn't want it at all. Sure, he's probably not even fit.
We have such an all or nothing, like the old Brendan Behan line, one drink is too many for me and 1,000 not enough. Like, that's kind of our...
Do you know, actually, do you remember, you know where the Sunset House is, not far from Croke Park? There's a pub there that for a while was called, from the Sunset House, was called the Brendan Behan Pub. I actually thought it was the most tasteless thing of all time to name a pub after a guy who basically died from alcoholism.
But should we celebrate in this country?
Yeah. You brought us down that path there now, bringing up Michael McDowell.
Yeah, I was going to ask for one more tip of you for Cheltenham on the Sunday, if you had anything lying away. You've got that novices race and the Schlure Chase too, that are interesting enough. Schlure, I probably wouldn't have it's a good contest. I wouldn't have a massive opinion on myself. I think Sir Royal probably takes it handily enough.
Yeah, he was brilliant last season. In terms of the Greatwood, I suppose looking at the Schlure Chase first, will I be there? Will I be in Galway? Don't know. If I'm in Cheltenham, I'll definitely enjoy this. He's only 13-8 in his return. Brain power is in there. You know, in fairness to Brain power, he was brain dead a lot of his runs as a chaser. Fell twice and seated another. Fell into his lap to finish second in the Arkle because he went mad up front. So Royale was brilliant last year. For a horse that's not the biggest, he's a really good jumper, a smooth travelling horse. Obviously, you have Le Presien in the race as well. I'd go with Sir Royale on the basis of just his class, although he just might need the run a bit as well with Alan King's horses maybe needing the run a bit.
It's a good little price though at 6-4 in there. Another one that I would have thought looked solid for your Sunday. We gave you the Saturday banker there in Voidarev, so I think that's another for me that looks just really, really solid.
Just in the Greatwood as well, I'm not 100% sure if this horse is going to be declared or not, but I would be interested to see if Hunter's Call came back. He was due to run at Cheltenham last year. He was owned by a cousin of mine, and he was a horse that I really wanted to get a hold of in some form of a syndicate form, but I didn't know he was actually selling him. And next thing he told me that he was sold to Britain. I was kind of gutted because it was like, I think this horse could do great things. And duly rocked up and won a massive handicap on his first start for Ollie Murphy, but he hasn't been seen since. And I actually now think he's not declared for Sunday, but he's a horse to keep an eye on.
Right, last one for me then. Ping Shu in the 150 on the Sunday, the Arkle trial. It's probably a little bit overpriced, the 6-1. Another one that's relatively competitive. It's always tough, I think, looking at that kind of race for the novices at that stage. A lot of them could be anything in this. You've got Defi Desai in there as well, who should be impressive. But
looking forward to seeing him over fence as well.
Massively. But I think Ping Shu just at 6-1 is too big for me. I think he's a grade one winner last year and stuff like that. So should be banging.
Absolutely.
There.
Moving from the horse racing actually reminds me of a little yarn that I heard this week. We're going to talk about Napiershig against Ballygunner in the Munster Club final. And Shane Dowling, I interviewed him this week. He's the star forward for Napiershig, among many star forwards actually that they have. But he's good friends with Mark Enright, the jockey.
He loves his racing.
And he was telling me a story from 2016 whereby himself, and they had a night out or whatever, and himself, he was at Mark Enright's house, and they were there with Brian Cooper. And didn't he find a pair of Brian Cooper's skins on the banister? So he says, I'll take them away with me. So he took them off with him with the idea that when Brian was riding Don Cossack in the Gold Cup, that he'd go to, and that Shane would go down to the local pub in Carradavon, I presume it was, and he'd put on the skins and sort of Maria ride the horse the whole way home down the pub, which he got a little bit too out of it and he forgot it. But anyway, he was on the phone to Mark Enright a couple of days later, who was in a car with
Cooper,
and I presume they were on speaker, and he says congratulations to Cooper and all that. He goes, "Hi, and well done to yourself, because Shane had just won the All-Ireland in 2016, the club final." And he goes, "And you might drop me back those colours whenever you get a chance as well." But that brings us, did you ever whip anyone's skins?
No.
Silks,
yeah.
Silks.
I was going to let you away with that, but I've whipped skins, but not silks.
Yeah. So the Pearshig against Ballygunner in the Munster final is actually going to be an excellent game. What's the prices?
It doesn't look it in the betting. 1-3 in the Pearshig, the draw 10-1 and Ballygunner 13-5. With only 4 points in the handicap, and we're talking off air about how this has been sort of relatively well contested in previous years, all right. So strange that it's so one sided in the betting there.
Yeah, they met a few times. They met in 2011 when Ballygunner probably would have been fancied, and the Pearshig had just won their first county title. They won it probably against the head from 9 points down. In the last couple of years, 2015 and 2017, Ballygunner have been winning at half time and they've ended up losing by 7 and 8 points. But again, there was nothing in it with like a minute or two to go. And I'd imagine that Ballygunner, like their determination should be absolutely huge to win this one. Because it's getting to that sort of time whereby they need to be winning a Munster title soon or it'll have passed them by. Like they've won one of nine Munster finals that they've ever contested. That was in 2001. So none of this generation has a title. So if you look at the spine of their team, they've Stephen O'Keefe, Barry Coughlin, Wayne Hutchinson, who played for Watford, as did Shane O'Sullivan. They've the two Mahonys, Park and Phillip. Like, they've got county quality all over the field. But of course, the Pearshig, they are an absolutely class team. As I know from first-hand experience, they've got quality all over the field. Peter Casey, Mike Casey, David Dempsey, Shane Dowling, William O'Donoghue, who's playing centre-back now. He's in and out of the Limerick team there last year or so. Really, really tight one to call. I just about have to go to the Pearshig again.
Is the betting fair? Does the betting reflect that fairly? 1-3 seems very short.
I think it's tighter than that. Yeah, yeah.
If you were going for winning margin, because we've got a few markets on that one, just looking down the winning margin, that's probably where you get some value if you are going with the Pearshig to win it, because 1-3 is just no value at all.
Yeah, you see, like last year, David Breen, who's no longer on the panel now, I might say, with the Pearshig, he works in S&C with Wasps Rugby, and he was travelling over and back to play, but he's not involved this year. They have a new manager. You'd have to wonder, like, is there maybe a chink this year with the Pearshig, because they've been going since November 2016. They've had no break with Limerick playing as well, so maybe at some stage they'll get caught. They've never ever lost a Munster Club Championship game.
I think Ballygunner have kind of very little to lose going into it. I know you're on about their stats, like, but the Pearshig are such strong favourites. Will there be any kind of any hangover from, you know, the year that they've had? The Limerick lads, obviously, and Ballygunner have some really good players, you know.
Oh, class, yeah.
And I think it could be close. The handicap looks one for me.
There is a few extra markets online you'll find if you do think the opposite. If you think the Pearshig run away, but if you've got something like score first, lead half time, win match 13-8 for the Pearshig all the way there.
That's actually
considering they're 1-3. That's a way to get a bit of extra value there.
Mm. And then we'll move on to Ballyboden against Cooldairy in the Leinster semi final as well. Probably fairly hard to back against Ballyboden here. They probably weren't again at their best against Clonkilde, Westmead champions. Now, we know that game was delayed a couple of days because there was a tragedy in Clonkill. Very unusual set of circumstances. A Tuesday night in Parnell Park. Rotten enough evening as well. I'd be looking towards Ballyboden here. What sort of prices do we have?
In the betting at the moment, 2-7 Ballyboden, the draw 10-1 and 3-1 about Cooldairy with 4 points again in the handicap.
Yeah, I mean, straight away with Cooldairy, who got to an All-Ireland in 2012 and they were annihilated by Lochiel Shamrocks that day, and Liam Watson in particular. Like, they have Kevin Connolly, they have Brian Carroll. They beat Mount Leinster Rangers, the Carlow champions, coming into this game. But while the Offaly teams have, you know, getting into semi-finals and a couple of Leinster finals, they're not exactly pushing too hard for titles in the last couple of years. Like, Kilcormac were really strong there for a while, but the Offaly teams have kind of fallen away a little bit, much like their county team as well. With Ballyboden, they do have some great attackers. They have Paul Ryan, Aidan Mellett's, you know, a little bit of lightning. Conal Keeney's obviously there. Niall McMorrow will probably float around midfield. And then in defence, they've got county quality with the likes of Simon Lambert, James Madden and Shane Durkin. So I think it'll be a brave man who go against Coolderry here.
You think it's a brave man to go against Coolderry?
Sorry, who go against Ballyboden?
Yeah, I was going to say, because again, such an odds-on prize, you're scrambling down to try and find something odds against. At least you can get Ballyboden to win both halves at 11-10, which at least makes, again, a cut above the sort of 2-7 price you're getting in the match betting.
Yep, not bad. And then finally, we look into the football in Ulster, Cross McGlen against Gweedore. We know Cross McGlen have got savage quality. I think it's 6 All-Ireland titles they've won. I went up and saw Gweedore play last year, or Gweediver if we're going to go with the Irish version of the name. They beat Carrigan of Antrim 3-11-1-13 in the last round. They've got some names that people will know. Kevin Cassidy plays for them. Keen Mulligan, maybe people don't know him, but he's a lightning, very small player, but lightning. Michael Carroll, he's been on the county panel. All three of those scored goals the last day. Oran McNeilish didn't play. I presume it's an injury, and he's after getting player of the year in Donegal. So they've plenty of quality there. Whereas Cross McGlen, they kind of limped over the line against Cole Island. 13 aside is how that game finished. And it was like 12 points to 10, and Cole Island were down two men for a long, long time there. Like, there was 11 yellow cards as well. Names that people might know for them, Aaron Kernan, James Morgan, Rian O'Neill and Oisín O'Neill there as well. Fairly tight in the betting, Declan.
It is, yeah. 5-6 for Cross McGlen, the draw, 13-2 in Gweedore at 5-4. No handicap betting as of yet. You'll probably get that on the day.
Yeah, when it's tight like that, you go with the team that's kind of been there and done it before. So just about nudge for Cross McGlen.
It's worth keeping an eye out for the handicap, what it turns out to be in that. Handicap draw might get you one of those that's just a big prize, a point or two in it will get you big old return and something like that. I think that's interesting.
Having the class of Aaron Kernan there going to make the difference. Bets of the week, lads.
I'll kick us off because I think we're all in agreement about the Ireland 1-12. I think 11-4 is just a great bet if you're going for the rugby. If you fancy Ireland to win, that's where you go. Straight up into that, you're getting a good solid price. And outside of that, you know, I probably wouldn't go too far outside of Tiger Roll, seeing me home. I know he's still in reappearance, just have a lot of faith in that horse. So I think he's probably a little bit shorter now than I would have liked. But yeah, Tiger Roll for me.
I'll go with Aminat to win at Dundalk. Why not go with Ballygunner in the handicap? Make it interesting and make it a very good game to watch as well, I think, if you wanted to have an interest.
Yeah, it should be cracker. Like, that won't be far off inter-county level. I'll go with the Rams and the Kansas City Chiefs to be over 62.5 points, so that's 10-11. And I'll go with, I'd say if there's a inside the handicap Ballygunner as well, I think it's a pretty good call. So that's about the height of it, lads. So we'd all
enjoy the weekend.
Got through it. Good luck on your stag, Johnny.
Yeah,
and getting back for your sister's match.
Indeed.
Yeah. Right, don't forget to follow us on iTunes and Spotify. We'll be back next week.
The Back Page, brought to you by Mirror Sport and backed by Ladbrokes.